Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome again to another edition of Insane in the Fembrain.
Fembrain.
Here we are again. Insane in the Fembrain. My word, it's going so well. Thank you to everyone that's taken the time to tune in to Insane in the Fembrain. It's been a blast. I really am getting my head around things. I'm learning as every episode, as I do with every episode, Insane in the Fembrain and Membrane. It's why I do it, learning. Just learning about people, finding out about what makes them tick. It's fascinating. Also, thank you to everyone for all your lovely messages. Thank you for all the likes and everything that you do. Thank you for spreading the word. If you haven't, please do so. Please spread the word. Please tell everybody about what we do. Go on to the iTunes thing and give us a 5-star review there and like and subscribe and pass it on, because then more people get involved and then we spread more joy out into the world. This week on Insane in the Fembrain, I was joined by world champion boxer Hannah Rankin. I knew of Hannah. I didn't know much about her. I knew of her, but Jade had done a radio show with her, and so Jade was like, "You should speak to her. She's a really interesting person." So we hooked up, and she really is. She's fantastic. You know, I've never really spoken to someone like a woman who was a boxer, and especially a world champion as well. She's also an incredible bassoonist, which is quite a thing. So she's a boxer and a bassoonist. I'd never spoken to someone who's played the bassoon before, so that was quite something. Just so you know, Hannah was on a phone with headphones in her flat, and so there'd be a lot of background noise. I don't know. She sounds like she lives quite near to a railway line. It sounds like under some kind of arches. So you're gonna hear a lot of trains going by. So you just block that out. Producer Paul has worked his magic as best he could. He's a very, very talented man. But you'll still hear some rumblings and things like that. But try and block that out, because it's a fascinating chat. So here we are, Hannah Rankin. I was watching your stuff today, and wow, my God. I mean, I've been punched in the head before, but...
Intentionally or...?
No, it's never intentionally. I probably deserved it at some point somewhere, but it's never intentional. But how did you get into that? How did you become a boxer, you know? Did you always like it?
No, so basically... My other job is I'm a professional classical musician, which is how I ended up on the show with Jade. I actually used to do taekwondo when I was a kid. So I think my mom was basically looking for a way of avoiding me and my sisters fighting each other. So she signed us up to taekwondo.
Oh, wow.
And so I did that when I was younger. And then when I started to get back into my music when I was a bit older at secondary school, I stopped that sort of combat sports and I was really focused on my music. Went to my undergraduate in Glasgow at the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland. And I wanted to get fit again. I've always been really into sport. So, but I'm not really a big gym fan. I don't love the gym. When you go there, everybody does that usual kind of tour of the gym where they go in. They get on the treadmill for a bit, then they get on the bike, look at the rowing machine, think maybe, and then you leave. So,
yes, that psychologically you've been to the gym.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think, I prefer to do like team sports or like, you know, combat sports. I love the discipline of a combat sport. So I got back into Thai boxing. And then when I moved to London to do my master's at the Royal Academy of Music, I started training at Gymbox. I was doing some Thai boxing there.
All right. Yeah.
And I then kind of met my coach, Noel Callan, and Derek Sweet D. Williams, former heavyweight champion. So and they kind of introduced me to boxing and I really fell in love with it. And so I started training that and I did some white collar fights to raise money for charity. And then I wanted to take it to the next level. And bear in mind, this is around the age of 23, 24. So it's quite late.
Yeah.
Well, but my coach was like, well, maybe you should go and join an amateur club. And I was like, well, I want to stay with you as my coach. And he wasn't an amateur coach at the time. He's like, well, why don't we try and do some, we'll take you to spar with some of the professionals and see how you get on. My God, it was the most difficult, stressful sparring of my life, but I learned a lot and I was desperate to get in there and do it again. And I think he could see that I was really into it and obsessed with learning how to, you know, become better. So yeah, I went and turned pro. So it was an exciting time.
It's incredible. And not only turned pro, I mean, you became world champion, which is incredible. That's not just like, oh yeah, I'll give it a bash. Like you've reached the top, which blows my mind.
Yeah, no, I'm really, really proud last year to made history for Scotland to become their first ever female world champion. So I'm really, really proud about that. But, you know, I kind of think it's in my nature. If I'm going to do something, I'm going to do like 150 million percent. So,
It was amazing. It was, I mean, that, because I was obviously looking at your things today and you play the bassoon.
Yep.
And why the bassoon?
Oh, because the bassoon's really cool.
It sounds weird me asking it that way. I've never met someone that has played the bassoon. So this is all new to me.
Okay, so basically I used to play, so we started off on the piano, but I come from quite a musical family. My mom and her two sisters played instruments. My granddad was a music teacher before he became a head teacher. So classical music was always kind of quite rooted in the family, as well as like, you know, Scottish country music and all that sort of stuff. So music's always been a big part of my family. So it was going to be kind of a natural cause that all of us played something. So we started on the piano, but like the piano wasn't really for me. I was much more interested in doing taekwondo at the time because I thought it was much cooler to punch people. I wasn't doing enough practice on the piano. So mom was like, oh, I'm not paying for your piano lessons if you don't want to practice. And then I started playing the flute and I really enjoyed that because I could play in ensembles at school and there was opportunities to play in orchestras and it's much more fun playing with people. I think the piano is quite a solo instrument. Mm. So I got up to my grade 7, I was about to do my grade 8 on the flute and a really lovely old lady donated a bassoon to my secondary school because she was utterly dismayed to find that we didn't have a bassoon in the orchestra. So, I mean, totally mad, but she donated a bassoon to the school. And when it came to school, our head of music, Mr. Pullen, was like, you know, we need somebody to play this. And I took a look at it and I wanted to have a go. And I thought, you know what? I want to play that. I'm fed up of being one of all these hundreds of flautists because, you know, flute and violin are the most popular instruments. So I was just why not? It looks really cool. It looks really weird. I'll pick it up. And I fell in love with it. And yes, a couple of years later, that actually was the starting point for me going on to have a professional career in music for sure. Because I fell in love with it. And it always has all the really quirky, weird musical lines. So like you get to be the joker or the really grumpy grandfather or, you know, or just the cool bass line. And that's the cool part. So, yeah, no, I think I definitely fell in love with it when I started learning it.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Because like I say, I've never met someone that's played the bassoon before. So
we're all really weird.
It's lovely. But they sound like my kind of people. I love that.
Yeah. I would probably say that bassoon players kind of, I'd say we kind of go in that really like quirky category of people who like strange kind of fine ales. You know, like those people.
Oh, yeah.
We all fit in that category.
But it just fits into what to who you are. I mean, you sound like you seem very driven and you, like whatever you do, you just attack it full on. Like you said, like just now, you just like, I give it 1,000%. You get stuck in. That to a lot of men can be quite. It scares them.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I have that with like Jade. Jade's very strong, powerful. She knows what she wants. And sometimes it can be quite, you know, it can take you by surprise sometimes. Have you found that? Do you Have you found it a problem for you?
I think
if you can't keep up, fuck you.
Well, I mean, that's definitely something that I have thought a lot of time. My fiance is really chilled and very laid back. He's always been really supportive of what I want to do. And I think he knew right from the get-go when he started dating me that I was very similar to my mum. And I've got two younger sisters. My dad didn't stand a chance. There were four women in the house. Never got in the bathroom, you know. So,
no.
But both my parents encouraged me and my two sisters to be really kind of independent. If we wanted to go and do something, we could go and do it. Whatever you wanted to go and do, you could go and do it. But you weren't allowed to just kind of have a go. You know, so if you wanted to go and learn the bassoon, you were going to learn it for at least a year and give it a proper go.
Right.
So like it was always encouraged. We were always encouraged to do what we wanted to do and try new things. But it was never kind of half-heartedly. If you were going to do something, you had to do it properly. And they supported us whatever. And I'm really thankful to my parents for doing that whole sort of taxi driver job where they took us to all of our extracurricular classes and extra music lessons. But I think that's made me quite an independent woman, I must admit, because you know, if I want to do something, I made a decision and I know the sort of the work that comes with it that is required. If you decide to do something, you should be putting a lot of effort into it. Mm. And I think that can be intimidating for some men, and especially in the boxing world, for example, you know, it's often described, people are surprised as an academic female who's come from the music world that I want to be in the boxing world, for example. And that can be quite intimidating. But I just kind of get on with it. And either you take me as I am, you know.
It's amazing. It's that because you tick all the boxes, like you've just said. You've got that. You're hard as fuck. Let's say that, and you're intelligent as well. And that combination, I don't know many men that can handle that. I know with Jade, sometimes I have to sort of take a step back and go, fuck, all right. And like you say, your fiance's a chilled out dude.
He's really laid back. And the same as my dad, actually. Yeah. Like, so I don't think my dad could have been like highly strung with having three daughters. But my two younger sisters have both gone into farming, just like my parents did. And so like all three of us have chosen to take careers in highly male dominated career paths. That's a really interesting thing. I find it quite fascinating. But we're all very successful at what we've chosen to do and what we're doing. And I think you've got to walk a very fine line of being a successful female and like kind of an alpha female, I suppose. You've got to be able to work alongside men and not make them feel sort of like you're belittling them or you're better than them or anything like that, you know? So that is a really difficult part of all three of our careers, you know, because especially in farming, it's so outdated. Like,
oh God, yeah. Oh, wow.
You don't see women doing a lot of farming as like, you know, it always used to be the men and then the women at home with the kids making the food, that sort of stuff. But
yeah, well, I think there's that. When I was growing up, it was very much like, you know, so I mean, my mum got it. She worked nights, but she still had to make sure dinner was on the table for the kids and make sure that dad had his dinner and all that sort of stuff. So there was very much like women's roles and men's roles. And
I think I think my mum is like one of my biggest heroes to me, because she had me at the age of 21, then my two younger sisters before she turned 23. So there was three of us under the age of three. By the time my mom was 23, she was also running the business equally with my dad, the farm business. So they had the farm together. They took on this hill farm just before I was born. And they were making a go of it, you know, making it successful. And my mom worked out on the farm equally to what my dad worked on the farm, but she had three young girls to look after as well. So it was kind of... Yeah, I was just so amazed, because I remember my childhood as being like this amazing time where, yes, I had to take part in all the activities on the farm and I had to work and help out and stuff. But my mom still made time to like, you know, have games for us. We did painting at home. We had birthdays at home. And, you know, we were taken to all these extracurricular things, encouraged to do the stuff that we wanted to do, she was like a superwoman, you know. And then later on, when we were older, she went on to do a degree in music and English. So like, it's like fascinating when, I think if you, as women, if you have strong role models like that, it can really push you to want to be successful and independent.
Yes, definitely. I remember when my mum she passed a driving test when we were kids, and it was the talk of the street. It's like, she's driving a car.
Wow.
Look at that. It's, yeah. Incredible. And that's only blimey, 40 years ago now. There's still that overlap. Things have changed now, and the playing field is a bit more level, but we're still having to have those conversations, aren't we?
Yeah,
you know, like still.
I think also,
you know,
though, there's that sort of thing, is like, it shouldn't be knocked that sort of position as mother and home, like carer of the home and, you know, the homemaker, that is a real role. You know, the fact that my mom managed to make our house a home, look after three kids, feed all the hungry farmers, make sure there's food prepared for everybody, and then take us to school and dress us and feed us, do everything, you know?
Yeah.
As well as running her role on the farm and doing all like the books and the business side of it. It's insane when you think about that. And like, but it shouldn't be belittled when people decide that they want to be a homemaker and they want to be a mother. That's what they want to do. Because there's a serious amount of work that is involved in that. But then equally, as a woman, if I want to go on, take on, have a successful career in business, or I want to go and be successful in some sort of field that isn't a mother, then I should be applauded for wanting to do that too. You know,
absolutely.
I find that often we're kind of pigeonholed one way or the other. And if you don't want to do one, then you're kind of, oh, you're not really a family person. But then if you want to be a business person, or you're too successful, like, why?
yeah. There's almost that, like you said, there's that people, I saw, there was a thing recently, and they were talking about, like you've just said, like women that want to be, they want that traditional, for want of a better phrase, female role. They're at home, they've got the kids, they make sure the house is running, and they do all that, and there was a few people commenting, going like saying that like, these women are letting the side down, and they're not. It should be, you know, doing it. And you're like you've just said, you're like, no, that's not the case at all. If you want to do that, then you
should be allowed to do that. It's like, you know, if someone wants to be, like, you've got a man, and he wants to be a stay-at-home dad. Why should he not be a stay-at-home dad? You know, that's a fantastic job, and it's just as difficult as him going to work in an office or something. You know, if he's got three kids and he's decided he wants to be a stay-at-home dad, he's going to look after the house. My wife has a more successful job. She earns more money than me, so I decided I'm going to take the role of looking after the kids. Why should that be a bad thing? But people, it's not where you should be sitting in. It's not your pigeonhole. So therefore, people are like, get out of it. You know, get back to where you belong.
That's it, yeah. And it's almost, this is just how I've sort of seen it. There's almost like, men are sort of championed and seen as heroes if they go, I'm a stay-at-home dad. Whoa, what a legend.
I know.
But if it's a woman, like, oh, I'm a stay-at-home mum, so?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Loads of women do it. It's like, but we all do it, and we should be applauded for it, because like at the moment you've got all families staying at home in this lockdown, right? And I think it's been a real eye-opening experience for families in general, like when you're having to homeschool your kids. You know, this is what your teachers go through with your children every day. You know, this is a whole other world that you've not experienced. And, you know, it's hard enough having them at home. But now you're doing the role of teacher as well. And there's parents, like fathers, who don't often spend time at home. They're now at home all the time, and they're seeing a whole other world. So I think it's not the most fun experience for all of us at the moment, but it's definitely an enlightening experience, I think.
Absolutely. It's definitely good. Absolutely. I think it's definitely going to shine a light on how
you're going to appreciate
lucky we were before, what we had. Absolutely. God, yeah, I can't wait to get out. And I was watching, like I said, I was watching some of your fights today. I'm like, I'd love to go out and punch someone. But that's just me getting fed up of being locked in the house. But that's the other thing as well, isn't it, with boxing? We were talking about this earlier. It's like, it's not just hitting people.
No.
You're figuring out, It's got levels of physical, mental, and physical. And that's what we were talking about.
It's like fascinating. It's what I love about the sport. You can never ever learn everything. And imagine going into that where you can always get in the ring with somebody different and they'll surprise you. And that's a fascinating thing, you know, like, and I love that about boxing because, you know, whenever you get into the ring on fight night, you can plan for whatever you want to plan for and you can watch videos of your opponent. You can prepare as much as possible, but until that bell goes, you don't know what's going to happen. And you have to employ your game plan and you have to figure somebody out in front of you in split seconds. And it's so fast and there's so much skill involved. And people who say it's just about hitting somebody, it's not. There's so much more involved. And to be a boxer, like I always say to people, I get people coming to my boxing classes and they're like, oh yeah, I've done an ultra marathon or I did the Tour de France or something ridiculous. And I'm like, yeah, but are you boxing fit? Because you won't be. In three rounds, you're going to be absolutely dying. It's a whole different sport where you use your brain as much as your body to achieve the outcome of what you want.
Yes.
And that's very tiring.
Oh, well, that's, yeah, because as soon as you get in the ring, you're psyched up and focused on what you've got to do.
Yeah.
And you've also got to sort of put, I guess, you've got to sort of push out because they're going to be psyching you out. Trying to figure you out, the whole
prep into a fight. You know, when they talk about the fight is won or lost on the scales beforehand, that is very true. You know, you stand up there on those scales and you face off against your opponent, you've all made weight, and you know, you look into their eyes and you know what you can see, you're in, like pushing onto them what you think, I'm going to beat you, and I know I'm going to beat you. Yeah. And it's all mental. And they always say about boxing, it's 90% mental. Because if you get into that ring and you're not mentally fully prepared for what's going to happen, you won't do well.
No. That like you say, that's, people don't take that into consideration. It's a really interesting sport. And did you find it, when you were getting into it, did you find there was any resistance?
Absolutely. No, for sure. Like, I think I'm really lucky to have had the support of my dad and my fiance Mike, because I think it's very, very hard if you want to go into this sport if you don't have the support of your family or your other half or your friends or anything, because it's a hard enough sport as it is, and to not have family support is difficult. And my coach Noel said to me when I decided I wanted to go pro, he said, that's great, I back you 100%. And however, I know this sounds Victorian, but I want you to speak to your dad and I want you to speak to Mike.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're the ones that are going to watch you get punched in the face. That's your dad and you're his little girl. And that's your fiance and you're his missus. So at the end of the day, you got to talk to them about it. And it's not because I think you should get their permission or anything. You just need to have a discussion about it. And I think that's probably one of the best pieces of advice I ever got. Because I sat down and I spoke to both of them and I said, look, this is what I want to do. What do you think? And my dad's response was, well, I know you, Hannah, and I know you've decided that that's what you're going to do anyway, isn't it? And I was like, yes, Dad. And he said, well, then I'll support you because, you know, it's your decision and it's your career and it's your life. But yeah, I want to make sure you have the best people around you. Do you trust your team? Do you trust these people to look after you? And at the end of the day, something really important that people don't think about, but your coach is the person that might save your life one day. So your coach is the person that you should really trust, who's with you day in, day out, and they'll know if there's something wrong in the boxing ring. And they're the ones that step in if they need to step in. So my dad was like, as long as you have a team that you trust and that support you and you believe will look after you, then I'll back you. And my fiance said the same thing, you know?
Amazing. How does Mike cope when does he go to watch the fights?
Yeah, they both come to watch the fights. As I've gotten to, like, they've come to all of them abroad as well, come to America. It's kind of like they're sort of like, I don't know, it's good bonding for them. They do a nice little trip together and they take the flight out, they sort out their hotels, they do their road trips, you know, I think they actually have a great time.
But it's even like whatever you're doing is like, it doesn't even matter anymore. It's like, oh, we get to hang out.
No,
brilliant.
Great, we're going to do this.
Oh, shit, there's a fight. Oh, we've got to go and do the fight.
My dad's been starting to get a bit more nervous. Like when he's My dad, Mike told me recently, he's watched my dad just take his glasses off, so he can't quite see everything that's going on in the ring. But I think he can, you know, he's cool, you know, and he phones me up and he always speaks to Noel, my coach, before. He always speaks to him beforehand, okay. Said, how's she doing? How's she feeling? How's this? How's that? And they have a chat, and it's like a man-to-man chat, and they have that chat, which is really nice.
That's lovely. See, this is the thing, you don't hear anyone talk about all these sorts of things. It's especially with the men's boxing, it's all about, you know, waving your dick around and going, oh, and that's the only bit you see. You don't actually see that there's probably conversations going on with wives and girlfriends and mums and
absolutely.
And parents.
You know, Tony Bellew, for example, like his wife never came to his fights. She didn't want to see him getting hurt in the ring. She didn't want to see any of that. And that was why he retired in the end, because it was too much for her. Because it caused her so much upset, I think. And he got to the stage where he wanted to be with his kids and his family. And his very last fight, she came.
Really?
But a lot of people, like, if my mum was still here today, I think the problem would be her not getting in the ring to get involved. So I'm kind of, in some ways, you know, that's a different thing. But
yeah.
So
I'm sorry to hear she's not here. I didn't realize.
I know
sorry.
She passed away about 6 years ago. But she never saw me box professionally or as a white collar. I actually got into boxing just as my mum got diagnosed with cancer. So it was a 6 month really rapid decline. And my dad actually encouraged me to go to the gym, and boxing really, I think it definitely saved me, because it was there to help me with my frustrations and angers and stuff that I had to deal with. So
Well, we talk because Jade lost her sister a few years ago, and we talk about it. We talk about we talk about them often, and how you deal with that person not being there anymore.
Yeah.
How do you cope with that? I mean, like you say, you go to the gym, but do you? I've spoken to a couple of people about grief on the podcast, because I haven't really lost anybody that was close to me, so I don't really know how it feels and how you cope with it.
You'll never know until it happens to you what it's really like. And I think that's something that is the hardest thing to deal with, because no one can prepare you for that. I think
especially someone as strong and driven as your mum sounds.
Yeah, exactly. My mum was a legend, so it's kind of, I think the hardest thing for me was that my mum was always the person that backed me in whatever I chose to do. So I decided I wanted to have a music career, and she backed me 100%. She was there at all my concerts. She was also my biggest critic, being musical herself, so she was always there to tell me when it was shit and tell me when it was good, you know. And that was important, and that was a really big part of my life, and not having that now is one of the hardest things, which is probably why whenever, like, so if I have a new teacher or something, I don't want a teacher that, like, mollycoddles me or babies me about stuff and says, oh, that was great, you know, just try again. No, I want to tell me when it's shit, tell me when it's not, you know, because that's what I expect. I really miss that aspect of phoning my mum and talking about that, because that's what she was, like, really good at, you know, and just tell me how it is. You miss that honesty.
What a legacy she's left.
I think she's a big part of what I do, and I think what drives me in what I do and where I want to be and how successful I want to be and what I achieve in my life is, and how, you know, people say, how do you deal with, like, the nerves before a fight, or you're not scared about this, you're not worried about that. And I said, nothing is ever going to hurt me as much as when I lost my mum. Nothing.
Mm.
And if you think about it that way, then there's nothing you can, like, nothing is going to be the same as that, because you can never repair that. Yeah. It's something you just have to live with.
Yeah. It's like that. We had a comedian called Ishan Akbar on, and he talks about when he lost his mum, and he talks about the grief. It's like a ball in a box, and in this box is a button, and the ball is massive and it fills the box.
Yeah.
And so the grief button is pushed down constantly. Yeah. And then as you go along, the ball gets smaller. And then it starts, so it's then the button of grief is released, and then every now and again the ball will bounce around and it will hit that button again.
Yeah.
But it's not constant. But you just sort of find a way.
It will come back, and it comes back when you don't expect it. The most So for me, like, obviously I associate my music with my mum. Like, that's a massive part for me. So I emotionally, when she passed away, it was very hard for me finishing my master's degree and stuff like that for that reason, because particular pieces I associate with my mum, like, massively so. And having played in orchestra with her, like, I'd often find I'd look to the cello section, you know, there's stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
And I'll be sitting there and I'll just drift off into like a memory of something musical with my mum. So music is a big trigger for me. I have to be very careful with that. But it does, I do find that obviously I have a very emotional character anyway. My coach says that, and my teachers always said I wore my heart on my sleeve. And I think that comes out in boxing and music. So just, you know, the emotions. But
it's funny.
I think the boxing is a good idea. You know, like with the ball and stuff. It is something that you kind of, you carry around, and it's always there. And occasionally you'll come across a topic that you're doing where it will make a reappearance, whether you want it to or not. And that is, it's something you deal with, and it does get like less, like, I don't know, prominent, I suppose, at certain times. But like for me, like Christmas, her birthday, Mother's Day is always hard, you know, because nowadays you can't escape the fact it's Mother's Day, whether or not you wish to or not. It's on every single social media. It's in every shop. It's on the television. It's on the radio. You're talking about it's Mother's Day. What's everybody doing? You know, like, that is really difficult because whether you want to think about it or not, you're forced to think about it.
It has become a massive thing now, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I've got a mate of mine called Tom. I've known him since I was three, and he lost his mum 15 years ago. And you know, every Mother's Day, I message him and go, "You're right." And he's like, "Yeah." He goes, "It's just bollocks, isn't it?" Because when we were kids, you buy your mum some flowers, and you might get her a card, but there wasn't this big fanfare.
Yeah,
there was this big,
that's the hard part,
marketing thing.
It's whether because nowadays everybody's determined to make money out of the holiday, and so you kind of, I used to feel really resentful because I used to find it made me angry that I was being forced to think about something to make money for other people when it was actually bringing my grief to the forefront. So now I'm much better at being able to deal with that sort of thing. But at the time, it used to make me really mad. Like, I was just upset about it.
I get it. When your mum passed away, did they, because, you know, you had so much resentment and anger and sadness, and were you boxing then?
I hadn't done any fights yet by that point. And what I actually found to be most helpful was that I had a family at the gym that wasn't my family, you know, like my blood relatives and stuff like that. I had people that were there if I wanted to be there, and if I didn't want to be there, I didn't want to be there, you know, so it didn't really matter. But I could come and take it out in the bag. And it was probably the only time, like when my mom was going through the last bits of the illness and stuff, it was the only way that I could really, truly switch off, was to become so tired in training that I couldn't think.
Yes.
And boxing, something you can do that in.
Yeah.
So
it's funny. Hearing, like, my mate Tom's mum, like I just mentioned earlier, she was a very strong, confident woman, and she got stuck in and she sorted shit out, and then she was taken too soon, I've seen that a few times where these people just burn bright but for a short amount of time.
Yeah.
And it's like, I find that fascinating, that these people that they just seem bulletproof. And
yeah, but that's what the hardest thing was because my mom had cancer, and you don't think that until it happens to you, you don't think it's going to happen to you. And I always saw my mum as invincible. So, she was mad as a box of frogs, but she was invincible. Like, she had, like, the craziest mood swings, and she did whatever she wanted to do, but she was mad. But then when that happened, and, you know, you find out that's what's happening, and you see the decline. And the hardest part, that is the hardest part, is watching someone that you see as the strongest person in your life slowly wear down.
Mm.
That's hard. That I find that harder to deal with than, like, you know, if it was a quicker situation. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just watched the strongest person in my life slowly get worn down by something that we couldn't fix. That was hard.
Yes.
So
That must, yeah, and you just want to do all you can. You want to reach in and grab it do something. Yeah, I remember seeing my mate's mum, and I remember going around there, and we're all laughing and mucking around, and I just saw this flicker of sadness in her eyes, just briefly. Yeah. And I remember, oh man, I didn't realise until that point. I was like, oh shit, of course, this is awful. And then what you were talking about music. I love music. I love all kinds of music. Yeah. But I say this all the time. I can't have sad, melancholy music on because it ruins my day.
Oh, I see. Like, there's moments when I want to, like, disappear into it. That's the best. Like, so I think because I have a love of, like, especially Russian music, I love things like Tchaikovsky and things like that. Yeah. So, like, the thing about Tchaikovsky and Russian music in general is that you can really feel, like, the innate sadness of the culture and of their history and their past. And like, that's an amazing thing to be able to get out of listening to something. You know, you can hear the weight of the sorrow for a long time that they've had in their history. And that's a beautiful thing. And it really just pulls the heartstrings.
That's the thing. I'm so, it's like, because Jade will put, she loves that sort of, you know, that melancholy sort of feeling, and I have to leave the rooms. I'm like, because I'll just be sat and I'll think about all the shit that's happened and all the bad stuff and all the, I should have been better and blah blah blah, and I don't know, maybe I'm running away from something, I don't know.
I think for that sort of thing, if you feel like that, it's good to know you feel like that, because then you can there'll be times when you want to feel like that, and there'll be times when you don't, and where you sometimes good to kind of delve into that occasionally. Because I always say to people, like, so when anyone asks me about like mental health and things like that, I say to people, it's important to know that you're not always going to be happy, because how can you always be happy? We all want to be happy all the time, but it's like, there is an equal part to everything. So if you're going to be that happy for something else, you've got to be sad in another way. So
we've talked about this before. No, that's the thing. I always think once I feel sad, that's it. I'm going to be something like two wires in my head will touch, and then I'll just be sad forever.
That's what you think is going to happen. But like when I lost my world title in Malta before Christmas, I wasn't in the right headspace before that fight. I know this now. It was a horrible lesson to learn at the time. Something they say about boxing is that if you're not your mental, that's all not all right, then you're not going to do well in the ring. And I learned the harsh way from that fight, and I lost my world title. That was the hardest time in my life. I've never been so down or miserable and really dark, went into a really, really dark place. And that, for the first time in my life, apart from having lost my mum, I went back to that sort of dark place when I lost my mum. That sort of like real anger and upset and misery that you don't feel that you're ever going to get out of again. And that's really hard to deal with. And I think what I learned from that is, one, I'm so grateful to have such a hands-on coach who's like real part of like my team, my family. He's just always there. And I had that person to talk to that wasn't my family, because I didn't think my family really got it, because they don't come from a sporting background. And so when you come from being at the pinnacle of your career to being the best you can be as a world champion, and then you lose it all, then that is something to deal with. It's something that's very, very hard to comprehend and understand. And it's because you think about how hard it was to get to that position, what you had to do to get there, how you got there. Are you ever going to be able to do it again? Can you afford to do it again? All that money you spent to get there.
Oh, yeah.
All that sort of thing. Like, and is anybody going to back you again? Or have you just really reached your pinnacle? You're never going to get to where you need to be. So like there's a lot of things in it, and that internal dialogue becomes the problem. And that's why you need to have someone that you can verbalize that with or talk to, or who understands your mood swings, or who's there to pick you up and make a check on you, whether you want to be checked on or not. Yeah. And that's the thing, is like my coach would just drop me a message every couple of hours. How are you doing? What are you up to? And like, I'd be like, I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to talk to anybody. You know, like, fuck off. Actually, thank God he did, because I needed that person there to stop me just continually free falling down, you know?
Yes. And that's the thing, isn't it? When, because a lot of the time people can't they can't vocalise how they're feeling, and they don't want to vocalise. They'll just bury themselves.
Yeah, and people say you should go talk to somebody. Like, then you feel like you're failing because you don't want to go talk to somebody about your mental health, because then maybe there's something wrong. Then you have to admit there's something wrong. And I think sometimes, like when my mum passed away, people were like, "Oh, I should go and talk to a psychiatrist." And I was like, "I'm not going to talk to anybody. I don't want to talk to someone like that about my personal stuff. It's my family. Like, I don't want to talk about my mum to somebody I don't know." And I was actually at that point in time really grateful for friends, because there are people who knew my mum, but they weren't my blood relatives. So I felt that it wasn't, they would give me a different perspective on things.
Yeah, it's that, like you say, that go and talk to someone. It's like, well, I don't really know how to.
Yeah, and how do you bring up a conversation like that?
Yeah. And no, that's it. It's like, well, it's like this. It's like I said at the beginning of this, it's like, you know, right, let's go and talk to women and find out about women, and let's start from the beginning and learn. And but then as you saw at the beginning, I didn't really know how to start it. Yeah. I was like, I don't know. Because I'm 48, you kind of think you got an angle, you got a handle on stuff.
Yeah, but it's good to think that as well.
But not, it's good. It's like Jade just shouted out, she's like, not women.
About her.
I know about you.
No, you fucking don't.
See, this is what I have to put up with all the time. If you're in a relationship with a strong woman, you have to have. Pardon?
Blessed.
I'm blessed, she said. you have to be like you say, chilled out, and
also be able to take the craziness. Because my sister is mad in Australia. She's the middle one, and she's always been the crazy one. And like, I mean, I'm now the crazy one because I decided to go and have a boxing career. But she was always the crazy one. She's got this boyfriend who, Alex, who sounds amazing. He's like, my dad says, he's perfect for Emma. He's so chilled, he's so laid back, and he just deals with her mood swings, just like water off a duck's back. He doesn't encourage them. He doesn't ignore them. He doesn't do anything that's going to, you know, it's just sometimes you just have to find what works, don't you?
Yeah, you have to know when to pick. You have to pick your battles.
Absolutely. I would definitely advise that.
Yeah.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
We're looking for a sponsor to help get this brilliant conversation to an even bigger audience. Sponsoring the show, as well as a promotional trailer, means that your message and our message will be inserted into some of Acast's biggest podcast titles. Get on board and partner with Insane in the Fembrain. Go to pauldaniels.tv for more information.
I love strong women. But it's been so. In the past, in relationships, I've felt, because I've been with women that have been very successful, and I just felt inadequate.
Yeah.
And it was that, but that was me. That was on me feeling that way. They didn't make me feel that way, but it's just that old school. I'm the man. I should be this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
But she's the one that's actually in a more, not dominant. That just sounds a bit odd, but in a more powerful role. And it, and
it's just, you have to accept.
I'd have occasion
that,
where, yeah.
Like it,
yes.
But accepting it's not that simple. It's like, oh, just accept it. No, you've got to be able to deal with the stigma of society before that. So like in your head, how you mentally have been brought up to your role as a man and what you feel you should be doing and how successful you feel you should be in comparison to your wife or your partner or whatever. And actually nowadays, so I'm a very open-minded person, as you can probably tell. So I don't really, I'm not that kind of person who's going to tell people they can or can't do stuff or be who they want to be. Because I say to people, you know, like, look, I've done exactly what I wanted to do. And it's not because I'm arrogant or anything, it's because I decided I want to do it and I put everything into it and I'm not kind of half-assed it. I've decided I'm going to do it and just told everybody I'm doing it and tough. So it's like, you know,
it's a brilliant, it's a brilliant.
That's just how it is.
A brilliant mindset to have. Yeah.
But I think also we're at the right time to do that. Like, I think if you told me to do this, maybe, I'm going to be 29, are we 30 this year? So say, you know, I'm just at the right moment in time itself to push forward for that sort of thing, where the things are changing and I want to be at the forefront of that change. I want to show girls who are coming through 10 years later, what I did now means that go for it. Do what you want. Do what you can do.
Yeah.
You know, like,
that's it. Yeah. And that's exactly what it needs. Again, it's like Jade with her Amazon show, Serious Black Jumper. It's like you say, it's showing women that, yeah, you can do what you want. You don't have to try and fit into where society tells you you should be.
Exactly. That drives me mad. Me and my mate, Sandy, were talking about this. So she's a boxer as well. She's up at Team GB. And like, we were talking about the fact that, like, if you want to be a successful female in the sport, like, men can be loud, brash, arrogant. You know, you're looking at some of the guys at Dirk Cazorras for a table at a press conference, right? So, you know, like, there's all this kind of mad stuff going on. But when me and Carissa Shields, when we fought each other, we had a proper, like, we didn't like each other. We were arguing.
No.
We had proper trash talk. We were, like, going at it. Like, I headbutted her at the weigh-in. It was all go, you know? But, like... And people were like, oh, you know, that's not how women behave. And I'm like, fuck you. How do women behave? Like, I'm preparing to go in there for 10 rounds of war. Like, I'm not going in there to have a cuddling contest. It's not what, I'm not going to put some makeup on. Like, I'm not going to go cooking. I'm going in there to fight and to punch somebody and cause pain and hurt them. So, like, I'm not going to be standing there being like, oh, it's so nice to meet you. Cheers, mate. Yeah, Otto, good show.
Okay, let's go.
Yeah, like, it's...
Queensbury rules.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just because we're women doesn't mean we should have to act like that. But I do find in Britain sometimes that is still portrayed as, oh, it's great to be humble. It's great to be, like, polite and lovely and this lovely feminine figure and all that sort of bollocks. And, excuse my French, but, like, I just...
No, you're right,
If you're going to be a fighter, be a fighter. Don't stand up there and be all saintly and be like be somebody that your grandmother, your granddad would have liked you to marry. You know, like, do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So I think that would really boost the sport, because that's what brings characters into the sport. It's what brings interesting people. Like, people don't watch boxing because, like, all of them are boxing geeks. People watch boxing because they want the outrage, all the ridiculousness that comes with it. Like, boxing, in my mind, is 50% entertainment and 50% sport. Obviously, you have to be bloody great at what you do in the ring. You have to be a fantastic athlete. You have to be a fantastic boxer, have a great mind, all of that. But then you can be an amazing boxer, but never really get anywhere because you're not willing, you don't have a personality, you don't have something that people want to follow, you haven't got weird things that you do. Like, you know, people have to want to follow you to make you successful. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
You've got to be entertaining. You've got to be something that people want to watch and tune in for. So I think there's a whole other side to it.
You chucking tables, chucking tables around and things like that is exactly what we want. That's what we want. We want that.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, that's the thing that we're going to talk about. Yeah, we'll talk about the fight, but we did the biggest chat is when, like, for an example, Conor McGregor.
Oh,
rocks
love
up in a
Conor
white...
McGregor. Love the guy.
He's brilliant.
Absolutely love him.
And that's what you want. Yeah, that is what you want. I want him to turn up in a white fur coat with no shirt.
Be
on.
Outrageous. He's just...
Yeah, that's what I want from my sports people.
Exactly, and you know? You've got it. Like MMA does it perfectly. UFC, like they've nailed that. That's a whole other world. And when you think all the way back to where this sort of sport originated from, you're looking like the gladiators back in Roman times. Like fighting's always been a sport. It's always been a spectator's thing, right? And the squeamish people don't want to talk about that. And people who don't really who don't appreciate it will never appreciate it, and they don't have that sort of like fire to appreciate that aspect of it, I don't think, because it's at the end of the day, if you were stuck in a room with somebody and there was one bit of food in the middle of the room and you hadn't eaten for 10 days, you're gonna fight that person for it.
Yeah.
And it's like a very, very deep down base instinct to fight and win. Like that's something that's in human nature, buried very, very deep. And I think that sometimes nowadays things are always shined off around the corners, around the edges, and it's all fluffy and nice. And you're always looking for the soft side of things. And actually you should be aware of the hard side of things as well. Like the base level, nasty side of stuff as well. That's what fighting is all about. And you can be an absolute technician in the ring and look amazing, and that's fantastic, but you've also got to have the whole thing that comes with it as well. You are an entertainer.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's what you are.
That's it, yeah. And you want people to buy tickets to your fight.
You have. That's how you get somewhere in the beginning. You have to sell tickets. So, like, some people won't, like, so I don't know if you know, but if you want to fight on a show, you have to sell, so you have to pay $1,000 to the house to be on the card. So you pay £1,000 to the promoter to be on, like, so this is on average, so £1,000 to the pro.
So you have to pay to, but you have to pay to be on.
Yeah, unless you're signed to that promoter, unless you're signed to him. If you're not signed to him, then you need to pay to be on the show in itself. First off, that's your first outlay of money. Second outlay of money, you have to sell 30, 35, 40 tickets before you can actually be on the card. If you haven't sold that minimum number of tickets, then you can't be on. And after all of that, if you're not signed to a promoter. Like, so for myself, I wasn't with a promoter for a long time until I signed in America. Right. But if you're not signed to a promoter, you have to find the money to pay your opponent's travel, all of that, their purse and everything. And after all of that's paid for, then you might make some money.
Oh my God. So I had no idea.
Boxing's a really, really, really hard sport. And it's why a lot of people are not successful and don't go anywhere in it. Because if you can't sell tickets, you can't succeed.
You can't do it, yeah.
So,
wow, I had no idea. I just thought it was a case of, you know, you got good at it, and then the word got around. I was like, oh, she's really good. Oh yeah, they should fight that person.
No.
I didn't realize it was
no. Wow. And it's all about matchmaking. Like, so if you get signed to a promoter, so for example, like a lot of people who come out of like the Olympic team here in the UK will probably sign with Eddie Hearn with Matchroom Boxing because they've had a fantastic amateur career. They're very successful and people know who they are. They've built up their fans and followers through that system, potentially winning a medal, you know, doing great things for our country. So a lot of them will sign with a big promoter straight away, for example, Matchroom. And they'll be on like a 3-fight deal or some sort of deal, and they'll get paid so much money, X amount per fight, guaranteed, and all of their opponents and everything else will be sorted out for them, and they have to sell some tickets, but it's not necessarily guaranteed that they have to sell a certain number of tickets, all that sort of stuff. But then for the people who start off like where I did, there was no way I was going to be signing to a promoter straight away. I had to work up there. I had to put a lot of my own money into where I got to. So I fought for free before, you know, so it's not. I've definitely paid to fight to get myself to where my career is. So.
Jesus. And then on top of that, you've got the stigma, not a stigma, but you know, it's a very male dominated profession. And you're a woman, so you've got that to deal with as well.
Absolutely. So, you know...
You've really got to want to do
especially
it.
As a woman, for example. Yeah. You've got a long way to come before you're at the base level where the guys start. And to do that, actually, me and my coach used to work some of the corners with my cut man, Richard Farnham, when he's there at the fights, and he used to take me along. And I'd make sure I learned who was on the show. I learned the fighters' names. So people go, oh, you're Noel's girl. That's what my name was for a long time.
Not even
Hannah. You're Noel's girl. No. Oh yeah. What's a pretty girl like you want to do boxing for? Classic.
Classic. Yeah.
Aren't you a musician? Don't you have a degree? Why are you doing boxing? Like, it's that sort of like response, which is bizarre. Don't get it.
Well, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, there's something wrong with me. Like, I love what I do, and like as people always say, why do you do it? I was like, 'cause I love it. It's not because I need to do it. It's not because it's the only thing available to me. No, I love the sport and I want to be in the sport and I want to be as successful as I can be in the sport.
I mean, like I say, watching you earlier, and I was just blown away with these fellas that are giving you shit, going, do you know what I mean? Like, oh, what's a pretty little girl like you? Blah, blah, blah. Go, do you know what, mate? Why don't you get in and do it? Why
don't
you
do that
go
to me
get in the ring? Go, go on. I was going to say, after I watched that today, I'm like, fuck that. I'm glad I'm doing this over the internet in case I say anything wrong.
You know what? I'm kind of glad I put the groundwork in at the beginning because, like, one of my philosophies in life is if you're going to do something, do it well. And so you do your homework. Like, so if you're going to go to a show and it's 10 male fights in the cards, that's 20 fighters. You should know who those fighters are. And it's good to know who their trainers are. So like if you're there and you're watching the fights and someone's there, you say, oh, they're looking good. Or you're talking to somebody. They're like, oh, who do you think's got this hand? And that's what I started to get after my third fight. People started to know who I was and they were like, oh, hey, Hannah, how's it going? What do you think about this one? But it took me a long time to get that sort of credibility and that sort of support from like the men, like even the trainers and stuff. Because like, a lot of people said to Noel, why are you training a chick? You'll make no money. And Noel said, I'm not training her to make money. I'm training her to see if I can make her a world champion. And we did that.
Yeah.
So
incredible.
Do you see what
incredible.
I mean? So it's that sort of thing.
Yeah. It's like with comedy. I started comedy about 15 years ago and they'd have one woman on. They would rarely have two on at the same time, and she would be on in the middle. And they used to call it the girl spot.
Oh yeah, they say, it's a chicks' fight. I'm going to the bar. That's a classic one.
Man,
you're like, she's driving me nuts.
But it's how it's. Yeah, I can imagine. It's because it has been a very. It's been not just boxing, but the world has been very much. Well, even now, we were talking about this the other day. Even with what's going on at the moment, the people that seem to be sorting out and really getting stuck in are the women. So you've got the Prime Minister of New Zealand.
Oh, yeah, she's great.
She's dealt with it. And you've got Nicola Sturgeon
up at my home.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
She's to the point. Do you know what I like about her? She's so Scottish. She's just to the point. Bish, bash, bosh. This is what I'm saying. And you better fucking do it.
Exactly. And that is what you need. We've got this big bag of custard down here. And he's just... No. That's not my joke, by the way. That's someone else told that. they don't... This what women just seem to know what to do. Like, they're just getting... Like they say, they...
But you think, I don't know if it's you like think a, about you know. Women, we're in that sort of crisis scenario half the time anyway. Like I go back to my mum, for example. She's got three kids. Two are at primary school. The first one's now at secondary school. So then the men are coming up today. So they've all got to be fed in the afternoon. There's going to be six men, three kids, two going to one school, one going to another school, coming home at different school times. Then they've all got to be fed at different times. Plus she's out working on the farm. So... then you're juggling all that. That is a bloody crisis in itself of like time management hell, you know, and everybody's got to be running around in the morning. Oh, I've got to get the school bus. I've got to go to this. Have I got lunch? Have I done this? Have I done that? And she's already been up since six. Lunch is done. You just pick up your lunchbox. You're already going. And she's busy putting out breakfast for the men. And you're like, wow. You know, when you look at that's crazy.
Yeah.
I think that inbuilt in women to kind of take control of a crazy scenario and kind of just like, right, let's just sort this out. I want this here, I want that there. Right, now let's think about it logically. And you wouldn't say women are logical at all, but we have a way of creating, whether it's an artistic view of it, whatever you want to look at it, there's a way of creating sense to it for ourselves, and then we, so the best ones can actually portray that to other people. It's like the woman in New Zealand, and also up in Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon. Like, you know, they have a way of just putting it out there so you feel better about it.
Yeah, exactly. And and you need telling. At the moment, we're not being told down here. He's kind of going, well, yeah, look, go to work if you can, stay at home if you can't. And it's all very vague. Whereas she's like, nope, this is what's happening, and this is what you're doing, and that is what we need. And women seem more pragmatic. Like Jade is very much like I said earlier. I was feeling a bit shit, and I was like just wandering around the flat, you know, kicking my heels. Like, oh God, I don't know what to do. And Jade would be just like, right, what do you do? This, 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 and this. And you're like, oh, all right, I just want to be miserable for a bit. She's like, nope, this is what we're doing. You're gonna do this, 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 and this. And I'm like, oh, all right, fine. But that's what you need sometimes. Yeah. And I don't know if men don't really. I don't know if men really do that.
I did that with my fiancé as well earlier. He was like, I'm not really feeling very motivated for this afternoon of work. And I was like, okay, well, have a biscuit, have a cup of tea, sit still for a bit, go on, play some computer games, kill some stuff, and then get back on it. Like, just do something, you know, like, or walk down the road, get a Red Bull, come back. Like, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I've got so much going on in my life most of the time that the days when I'm feeling like I'm not want to do stuff, that's when I know I'm feeling down, because like I normally don't have the time to feel like that. Like I can't decide what I'm doing. Can't, blah, blah, blah. There's too much shit to do. Yeah. Like it's just too much to do all the time.
And the thing is, again, with Jade, because Jade's really, she's got stuff going on all the time, and you know, and she's doing this, doing that, and there's a. And I have to keep up. I feel I have to keep up with her. I don't want to be this miserable, sad sack just sitting on the bed going, oh, why isn't anyone phoning me? Why haven't I got stuff? You kind of go, well, I feel I need to get stuck in and sort of try and meet her level. Otherwise, I feel useless and pathetic, and you know. So I'm glad that she's like that, because it fires me up, and I'm sure your fiance feels the same.
Well, I'm sure I drive her mad, like I actually do. Like,
yeah, of course, she drives me insane.
Well, I think there's two ways of looking at it. You have like one. So Mike always says, like, so we're complete opposites in many things. Like I'm a mad, stressful nutter that runs a million miles an hour all of the time. He's so laid back, he's horizontal. He's like the best procrastinator in the whole entire world. It drives me insane. However, like sometimes when I get to the weekend and I see him and he's like, and I'm like, oh, I want to do this, this, and this. We're going to go and do this. We're going to do that. He's like, no, today we're doing nothing. We're going to watch some films. You're going to sit in the house. You're going to sit still. And I'm like, well, I don't want to do that. But actually, I needed to sit still. Otherwise, I'd burn myself out. So I needed that person just to slow me down for 5 seconds, sit still, and actually realize, oh, you know what? I could have done with this. I needed a rest day. You know, I needed to do nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, the next day, I was like, okay, I feel better. And yes, you were right. And however, today we're going to do this.
That's it. You're back on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Where did you and Mike meet?
So Mike actually knew my mum before he knew me, because him and my mum used to sing in a choir together. And his mum taught my sister the violin. So we knew each other from that. And then, like, so we've been dating since I was 15. So we've been going out for, 14 years now? So we've grown up together kind of thing. He was there for all of the ups and downs in my life, all the big, big moments, everything like that. So we've done everything together. And I think that's kind of what makes it work. We managed to live together for 1 year, but it was killing ourselves trying to do the commute either way. Like him going up to, he lives in the Midlands at the moment, working for Jaguar Land Rover, he does engineering. And I obviously am down here based in London. So he's hoping to move down to London. But then that'll be the first time we've probably lived together. We're meant to be getting married. There's so much stuff happening right now. That's not happening. And,
That's a shame.
It is and it isn't, because like I want to get married, but I want to enjoy getting married. And like at the moment, I know some people would think this is a bit like, I don't know, not very feminine of me. However, I will say like, I actually like, you know, I want to become world champion again this year. And if I can do it by the end of the year, I'll be really stoked. If I can't do it by the end of the year, it'll be the beginning of the next year. But for me, that is my sole focus. And my career as a professional boxer is not going to last forever. And Mike gets that, you know, and he's like, we want to put the money and the time into having a wedding that we want to do for ourselves. But to do that, I have to take some time off my career. And I don't really have that time at the moment.
No.
Do you see what I mean? So,
oh, absolutely.
And
yeah,
also,
yeah,
I don't want to look like the Hulk in a wedding dress. You know, like, because I'm like, when I'm boxing, yeah, the body I have, the physique I'll have for boxing is not the physique I want in a white wedding dress.
So, no, you all...
There's a whole other world to it.
Yeah. It's funny that you've got that. That's quite the juxtaposition, isn't it? You got that. You've got the fighting going on, and you're like, I want to be this and that. But then you want to be, you know, there's the feminine side.
Yeah, I want to look like a girl. Like you say, you know,
yeah.
There's all that aspect to it. And I want it to be like what I want it to be like. And when you get, I think when you get married, people have feel this sort of pressure from families and to do it this way and do it like now and make sure that you get it done in time for this and all this sort of stuff. And actually, when it comes down to it, when you get married, it's about you two and nobody else. So the only person that I really want at my wedding is my dad, obviously, and my sisters. And the same for Micah's parents, you know, like, where we after that we don't want to do like the big wedding day thing. Like my whole job is about being center of attention. When I get married, I don't want to be that. I don't want to do the big white wedding day. No. I want it to be a chilled out affair where basically it's a chance for us to get together, get married, celebrate that, and have a massive party with everyone.
Yes.
That's basically what I want to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh man, I imagine it's listening, talking to you now. I reckon you're going to do it. I reckon you will. I'd be very surprised if you don't.
Yeah, we'll get round to it.
You're so driven.
It's just one of those things where, like, you have to think about... I think everyone goes, oh, right, so you have a boyfriend, then you get engaged, then you get married, then you have a kid. That's, like, the timeline, isn't it? That's not my timeline.
Yes.
My timeline is I meet my boyfriend, we go out for 15 years, I get engaged. I've been engaged for 4 years or 3 years now. And the plan was we get married, but we never did that. And now I want to be a world champion again. So that's kind of got in the way of it. And he wants to move down to London. We want to get a house together. You know, and kids, I want kids. I don't want kids now. Like I've got like my whole life. And my mom always said to me, one of the best pieces of advice that she said was I don't regret one little bit about having you girls. Cause that was the best thing I ever did. What I will give you advice is that, make sure you do all the things you want to do for yourself before you have kids. Not because it's a selfish thing, but because once you have kids, they are your world. And that's what is the most important thing to you more than anything else. So you can't do that crazy thing like jump out a plane. Like, you can't do it.
No, that's done.
Yeah, so she said that to me, and that's what I've taken that to heart, you know, and I want to make sure that I go for that world title and I try that again before I then decide, right, I want to give my time to my kids.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very, I've got kids and they are, blimey, he's as old, my eldest is 28, so bloody hell. That's your life then. So whatever you wanted to do, you kind of go, oh, no, I can't, so you're doing it absolutely the right way round on your own terms when you want to do it, getting all your stuff done.
Yeah, and people might think that's me being selfish and that's me not doing what a woman should do. And that's not fair on my fiance. And that's not fair. But then think about it the other way around. If my fiance wanted to become a world champion and postpone our wedding, then he could.
Yeah, it
wouldn't even be questioned. And you know, once I've had a kid, I'm not going to box again. That changes your body shape.
No.
You can't do that. It's just not, I just wouldn't do it. There's no way I would.
No.
And that's something that you have to really think about.
Yeah. Well, we've Jade and I have talked about that. It's that, once when a woman has a baby, it sort of takes your life force.
Yeah.
You know, you've created this other being and they take with you your energy and your, you know, you give so much to create that person.
Of course. Well, you think about it, you're creating another person.
Yeah, exactly.
Mad.
Yeah. I do you know what? Yeah, as you've said it out loud, I'm like, oh fuck yeah.
Yeah.
And this is men, I'm not, no disrespect to men, but we really need to start understanding more. This is why I want to have these conversations, is understanding more about what it takes to be a woman. Because we don't really know. Women, you know, you create life, you know, men. They do, you know, they give you a bit of seed and then that's it. You know, you have to do the rest. And I think that's what we need to start having conversations about, is understanding what it takes to create another person.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
It takes a little bit of you, I'm sure. A little bit of you.
Absolutely.
Every single time.
Yeah.
So, like, but it's a whole world that I am so not ready for yet. You know that part when you know. Like,
yeah,
I'm not there yet.
You've got plenty of time. You've got plenty of time. And I reckon you'll be number one again. I'm telling you, watching you today, I'm like, yeah, you'll smash it, mate. Absolutely smash it. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you, Hannah. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, no, thank you so much for having me. It's been a great chat. Really enjoyed it.
It's been really, thank you. And, you know, I mean, all this at the moment, I suppose all training and that is all sort of up in the air.
Well, I'm training as best I can at the moment. Obviously, like I said, my focus is to get a shot at that world title again, or get the rematch with the girl I fought before. So, like, for me, that's driving me and pushing me. And so I'm just kind of missing, you know, the sparring stuff. But me and my coach are constantly in contact. I'm keeping on top of the weight. I'm making sure that I'm keeping fit and active. So I'm going to be ready to go should I get the call, which is the best part.
Brilliant. 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 This has been fantastic. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. It's been great.
Produced by Paul Daniels at pauldaniels.tv.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.